It's a new era in Tallahassee, Michael, and we've got some coaching hires to talk about. They actually didn't even wait for the clock to hit zero against Florida, as Gus Malzahn was already named before that game even kicked off. But we've got some more names to throw in the hat today. So a lot of exciting stuff to talk about, Michael. This is what we've been waiting for. That 2024 terrible season is completely over and in the rearview mirror now. And it's on to 2025, and we've already got some moving and shaking going on around Florida State news cycle. So excited to get into all that with you guys today. We got some reactions from this past weekend, because we got a little bit of someone to talk about here before we move on. We're not going to let them live without it. And then we got some, you know, players popping in the portal, things going on, man. Just a fully loaded episode for you guys. So really excited about this one, Michael. Before we jump into things, how are you, my friend? And thanks for joining me.
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. I was doing great as soon as that clock hit zero, because then, you know, I know there were a lot of flag planting this year. I wish somebody would have planted a 2024 flag with a big X on it and been like, we're done, you know? So glad for this season to be over with. And I'm really excited, not necessarily about all the things happening, but just excited to put that terrible season to bed and start to look and analyze with a closer eye this year of what Mike Norvell is going to do to turn this around. And so really excited to get into a lot of that.
Yeah, I think with you mentioned it, because with the way things went this year and really being – thinking we were going to be here, and then there's not enough screen to hang my hand off of to where, and we ended up, I think everybody's going to be cautiously optimistic this year. Right. Everything is going to be under a microscope, you know, from the hires to the portal moves to every single thing they do is going to be highly scrutinized. And it's because we've got to be careful. You know, we want to be right about this, but we want what's best for this program. And right. So we got two really new hires to talk about, and I'll be honest, there's a little bit of love and hate on both of these, but I think we're both
correct.
Relatively kind of happy with the way things shook out. So we're going to get into that in 1 second. But yeah, man, glad that season was over with. I was actually at the Florida game this past Saturday, which most of you were aware of. Man, I always love being back in Doak, but I'm tired of walking out of there after a loss. And so hopefully we can get back on track for things. You know, the weather was great. We had a great time tailgating, but obviously it's never the same whenever you walk out of there after a loss. And I do want to give a quick shout out to my guy, Ronnie, who listens. It was weird. You know, it's funny. We were sitting in the stands towards the end of the game and someone calls me by name and I'm like, who knows my name here? What is going on right now? And I was a few legacy loggers into the game, you know, because things weren't going great. And so I just went along with it. But yeah, he's like, yeah, man, I watch the show all the time and, you know, really enjoy what you guys do. So shout out to Ronnie, man. I really appreciate you picking me out in the crowd and saying, hey, man, you know, we do this for you guys. And so that's y'all right. Stuck with us through this terrible offseason. So shout out to you guys as well as Ronnie, who saw me at the game. So, man, it's pretty cool. You know, that's it's a cool moment for me as well. But yeah, man, appreciate that. And so, Michael, let's just jump right into these coaching hires. Right. And the first one that we're going to talk about here, let's give some thoughts, obviously. So first thing we got to say is Gus Malzahn at the time of recording this about 7 o'clock. Here on the December the 2nd. So one of these is official and three of these correct. Are very heavily rumored, right? We can pretty correct. Much point our finger at most of these, but Gus Malzahn is currently the only one that is official right now. So that's where we're going to start, but we'll just do some quick overall thoughts, right? I think when you look at these, so the hires are going to be Gus Malzahn at OC. We'll break down everyone individually. We're hoping that he brings along offensive line coach Herb Hand from UCF there. And then the rumored DC hire is Tony White, defensive coordinator from Nebraska. From everything that we're reading at this time, they have already agreed to terms. It's going to be a 3-year contract, but I don't really like to let the proverbial cat out of the bag until the school makes the announcement. Right. So that's why we're just saying we think this is who it's going to be. We just don't know for sure yet. And then there's also the rumor that we are really excited about, that Terrence Knighton, a.k.a. Pot Roast, is going to be Pot coming Roast. In as the new defensive line coach. So that one is exciting, too. So now that you got the names in the back of your mind, let's talk about these, Michael. And I think when I look at these two names for sure and two potentials, that the first thing that comes to my mind is high floor.
Right.
And so we were a little bit nervous about how this off-season cycle was going to go because, you know, on the one hand, we thought like, man, you got to shake this coaching staff up. You got to bring in some young guys. Who are you going to get? We know that it wasn't going to be an easy process coming off a 2-10 season. There's some uncertainty about Mike Norvell's the length of his future. We know he's going to be here probably 2 more years. So we weren't sure that you were necessarily going to go out and be able to get top names, but we knew you couldn't expect you couldn't accept G5 coaches across the board at a place like Florida State again. Correct. And so we were a little bit kind of worried what we were going to get. And I'll admit, these were not two of the names that we had on our board. We did mention Gus, but we did not mention the Nebraska guy. But I think this, to me, screams high floor, right? We saw where you had said, what was it, Peter Boulware had tweeted out, like, now is not the time to take chances. You need experienced guys. And I think that's what Mike Norvell did. He said, look, I and we talked about this before the show. I think where Mike Norvell is at is like, look, the last staff got us to the top of the ACC, and it was he probably knows that staff should have been overhauled a long time ago.
Right.
So, like, really, as long as you can build a better staff and have that almost guaranteed win floor that you can put together in the ACC, I mean, really, you got SMU, you got Clemson, you got Miami. You do better than 80% of the conference, and you're right back where you want to be, you know, in the running for things. So I feel like this feels like a experience-heavy, high-floor coaching staff that can put you at the forefront of the ACC. And we'll break down everyone individually. But, yeah, man, it seems that he wants guys he can trust. He wants guys with experience, and he wants guys that are proven. And I think that's exactly what they got in these hires.
Yeah, I think it all starts from the right at the foundation of Mike Norvell himself. Yeah, it became very clear and very, very evident that he needed to take his hands off the offense. It's not that Mike became a bad play caller and a bad offensive coach overnight. Like, it just happened. No, he's still probably one of the best offensive minds in the game. But when you are running a power four, because there's no power five anymore, when you're running a power four program of the iconic brand and prestige of Florida State in this era of NIL and transfer portal and evaluations and having to raise money for both the program and the paid players, you can't be so ingrained into the day-to-day of the play calling, of the running the offense, of all that stuff. And really, your previous offensive coordinator was just more so focused on the offensive line. He wasn't game plan. He probably was. Let me just not say that. He probably was game planning with you, but he probably wasn't doing the majority of that. You were probably pulling a lot of the leg on the game planning and the calls you wanted to make, the scripting. Also, you were the best recruiter on this team. Let's just be real. So you were heavily involved in the recruiting aspect of that as well. You were heavily involved in raising the money. You were doing so much. And so I think these hires, what it signifies is that Mike is really going to step into that CEO role that we've been saying he needed to do, which will get him out of the day-to-day of the offense. Yep. He brings in somebody who's basically become his, who was like what we joked about, but his coaching father in college football, Gus Malzahn. You know, we'll break this all down, but you'll see a lot of the same types of tendencies that Mike had. You'll see that with Gus. I mean, you're going to see a lot of this stuff, but he can entrust that offense to Gus. If the hire is Tony White on the defense, he can entrust that defense to Tony, and then it'll allow him to actually do what he does best. I mean, a la Nick Saban. Nick Saban was a defensive-minded coach. I'm sure he sat in on some of the defensive meetings, but that man spent more time being the CEO of the program, recruiting where he needed to recruit, raising money where he needed to raise money for, and he entrusted the coordinating of his defense and his offense to those kinds of guys. Remember, he had Kirby Smart as his defensive coordinator. He had Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian as and Bill O'Brien as his offensive coordinators. And so as you can see, Mike is taking that Nick Saban approach by getting these veteran coordinators in to run their respective side of the ball so that he can really elevate to that CEO level.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree there. And, you know, when you look at Gus Malzahn to start with, the first one that we're going to talk about here, I mean, he literally went and hired the top of his coaching tree. And so I do think, like, from what I understand, the reports were it was still Marion. He was the guy. And then something about middle of the week, it changed. It flipped. Maybe it was a conversation with Gus that, like, okay, this can really happen. And so they went in a different direction. But they definitely, I mean, he, again, like, you know, I was explaining this to my wife, who's a Georgia fan. I'm like, now, please, for the love of goodness, listen, don't clip this. Let me explain this. This is not from a on the field sense, right? But this is almost like if Kirby Smart went and hired Nick Saban, right? This is the top of your coaching tree. I'm not saying Gus Malzahn is Nick Saban, but you get what I'm saying. So I think, you bring in a guy who's proven. He's been a Power 5 head coach. He's been UCS Power 5 now. So he's been a Power 5 head coach. He's been a coordinator. He's had a lot of success. I mean, even, like, I know people are going to be down on him a little bit from what happened at UCF. And we're going to talk about all that as we get into this. But even then, his head coaching record is 105-62. I mean, he's got a almost 63% win percentage. That's still not that bad, especially when you consider a lot of his time as a head coach was spent in the SEC West when Bama was Bama.
That's right.
And that was the toughest division in college football. Like, I started doing some research on him, and they had a top 10 strength of schedule in 6 of his 8 years at Auburn.
Yeah.
So for the people who like think, oh, well, he got pushed out at Auburn and all that. Well, I mean, you were in the West, man. That's the, look at what they've done since they got rid of him. So it's, you know, it's not been great there, but again, you know, you bring in a guy as an OC who has a 61-21 record. So he's proven that he can win. He's a national championship OC in 2010 with Cam Newton. SEC championships, he's got two of those in 2010 and 2013. He's got SEC West championships at Arkansas and at Auburn.
Yep.
Again, he's a proven winner. He coached a Heisman winner in Cam Newton. He coached Darren McFadden at Arkansas.
Yes,
like, I mean, so he's done some impressive things. 2013 Coach of the Year, 2010 Broyles Award winner, 2006 National OC of the Year. He's beat Nick Saban. He's beat Kirby Smart. He beat Mario Cristobal's 12-win team at Oregon in 2019. And so, again, man, I think when you look at what Gus brings to the table, he brings you that stability. He brings you that high floor. He brings you that experience. I think not only does he bring you experience as a Power Four former head coach, as a OC, as a recruiter, he knows what it takes to win a national championship because he's been on national championship staffs. He's been on a staff that, you know, obviously we played for the national championship, so thankfully they didn't win there. But, you know, I think, man, he just brings an experienced voice to the room. And so I think your two biggest concerns, because we're going to be real on this, we're going to air our in excitements and our concerns with these. And so with Gus, like, I think what really excites me here is when it's been good, it's been good. And so when you look back at his career as OC or head coach, in 12 of 18 seasons, they've had an offense, rushing offense average over 200 yards a game. And there were two more of them at 196. So if you grade with the curve, that's pretty much almost every single year they're rushing for like 200 yards. So that's good too. 14 of the 18 years, they've averaged 30 plus points a game. He's had 8 top 10 rushing offenses, 2 top 10 passing offenses, and a top 25 offense in yardage 9 times. Now, granted, I don't really care to use the yardage there. Total offense is kind of an antiquated stat. But, you know, you also look at, like, when we talked about Brennan Merriam, this is the head of that coaching tree that they all come from. The current ACC, about to play for the ACC championship, Rhett Lashley.
That's
a Malzahn guy too.
That's right.
Like, you went out and got the top of the tree. And so I think the concern with him is obviously what happened with UCF.
Yeah.
But when I look at UCF, so they still have done great in total offense, which I just told you guys, again, I don't really like to use that, but 16th, 8th, 16th, and then 66th is first year there. Their scoring offense has been where they struggled a little bit, 47th, 41st, 31st, and 38th, but they have averaged 31.6 points per game at UCF. So they've been over 30 points a game in every single season. Now, when you look at some advanced metrics, they've been 27th, 30th, 32nd, and 63rd, the F-plus rating. So in advanced metrics, which is pace of play and opponent adjusted, they've been around a top 30 offense in 3 of his 4 years there. But I think what worries you is he's about to turn 60 years old. Has the time, has the game passed him by, right? Because the same conversation could be said about Jimbo Fisher, where it's like, you recruited well. You had a great offense back in 2014. It didn't work in the modern era. Things started to kind of slack off. So you worry that he's lost a little bit of that. But what I do want to say is, this comes back to the Chip Kelly situation. Now, that can be good, looked at good and bad in some ways. But I think, you know, when you have a guy who doesn't have to focus on being the head coach, where all you have to do is game plan on offense, all you have to do is game plan on recruiting and watch your side of the ball, I think that is something that will give him a boost, because it's just not as much responsibility. And, you know, we were talking about this before, where I don't really care what your record is as a head coach, because there's so many aspects that go into that, that it doesn't define you as a coordinator. Because we both said, if we could pick from the, you know, the Christmas tree of offensive candidates or defensive candidates, it would have been Will Muschamp.
Correct.
Elite defensive recruiter, terrible head coach.
Yep.
So all I care about is your ability as a play caller. So there's some positive there. There's some negative there. The last thing I want to touch on with Gus, and I'll throw it back to you, because I know you weren't as high on Gus as I was. Now, listen, I'm not jumping up and down over Gus, right? Let's be honest. I think the one area that I'm most worried about is actually him as an offensive coordinator. I like everything else he brings to the table.
Yeah.
From a mentor to Mike, from a you know, just a steadying voice, an experienced guy, someone who's seen it at the big level. I worry about the offense. He can run the ball. We're going to run the ball well. Trust me. Yeah. That is going to happen. I hope Mike Norvell can help some of the passing concepts come along, because they're not the greatest. But the last thing I want to touch on is the recruiting. And this is where I think Gus is a good asset to this staff. I know he's about to turn 60, and people are going to question how much he wants to recruit. But when he was at Auburn, they had six top 25 classes in 8 years. Six top 10 classes in 8 years. And the two that weren't top 10 were 11th and 12th. So he's recruited better than Mike Norvell's highest class at FSU was 12th. And so he's recruited better than Mike Norvell has as a head coach every single year he was at Auburn. It's not exactly easy to recruit well at UCF. Like, I have a friend that covers UCF, and we had a side podcast together for a while. And he told me that, like, UCF is coming along. They're an up-and-coming program, right? They just jumped into the Power Four, but they're still building their NIL out. They have enough money to go get a player here or a player there. They don't have the money like one of the other big three programs in the state of Florida to just go stock that roster with talent. But even then, you look at what UCF has done. So from 2014, because that's where the 247 rankings get they start to lose reliability before 2014. So 2014 to 2020, UCF had zero top 50 classes, only two in the top 60. And so far since Gus has been there, they've been 37, 38, 34th, and 38th. So he's had the best recruiting UCF has ever had, at least since the last decade.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, I think this is a good hire. I think he'll be able to recruit, especially when he doesn't have to watch over a whole team. And even then, I know, again, like, people will trash on him for the UCF, but, you know, 4-8's not great. I get it. Maybe he was going to be fired. Maybe he was going to be pushed out. I get that, too.
Yep.
But, you know, they also lost to Colorado. They lost to Florida. They lost to number nine Iowa. They lost to BYU and Arizona State this year. Those are all good teams. So, you know, they're still making that jump. So, man, I'm not jumping for joy over Gus, but I definitely like the hire. I do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was driving back on Thanksgiving as we've talked about, so I couldn't go to the Florida game. And when the news broke that it was going to be Gus Malzahn, I about wrecked us into the side of the mountain in Tennessee.
I know you were pissed when we were first texting about it.
I was not happy about it at all, because I live in Orlando. So, you know, I'm very connected to the UCF, like, atmosphere. We have a lot of people that I pastor that go to UCF, and I sent you this text. I had a prominent booster send me this text. He said, I hope FSU likes having a three playbook, meaning there's three plays in the book, minimum of five delay of game penalties per game, and an occasional predictable trick play that doesn't work. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. You're telling me we're basically, I mean, he was making about $4 million, a little over $4 million a year. So, you know, our offensive coordinator was at, Alex Atkins was like $1.3 million. So, you know, they're close to $2 million on this hire. I would imagine they're close to $2 million on this hire. We're spending that much money for a three-trick pony? Like, what are we doing here? And so I was not happy about it. I think I texted you, this is the worst decision ever.
You were ready to hand out some pink slips over this.
I was ready to fire everybody. I think I even tweeted, like, bring Dion. I'm so mad. You know I have to be mad to want Dion to come back and coach you.
Yeah.
But after I got back home and started doing some research and watching game tape, I will say that I have moved from this is terrible, fire everybody, too. I'm in the middle, and that's where I'm going to stay. I'm going to stay right here, because I believe in Mike Norvell. I've always believed in Mike Norvell. And so I'm going to trust that he sees this as an opportunity, again, like we said, for him to move to that CEO position. And if you're going to move to that CEO position, you have to have absolute 100% trust in your offensive coordinator when you're an offensive head coach. So he trusts Gus Malzahn. Like you said, he's at the top of his tree. When Gus, as a offensive coordinator, the stats don't lie. When he's just simply an offensive coordinator, the stats do not lie. At Arkansas, at Tulsa, at Auburn. It has shown that he's actually really, really good. Yeah. The concern I had, which we talked about in the pre-show, was that, you know, if this was 2006, absolutely, it's a no-brainer for Gus Malzahn, because the concepts that he was bringing from Springdale, Arkansas, where he was the high school coach, into the college game had not been seen. Now it's all over. Almost everybody's running the Gus Malzahn concepts and the spread offense. Even the NFL is now running it. And so the worry I have is that, has the game passed him by in his concepts, just like we had with Jimbo, right? Jimbo had this incredible offense, like we talked about, in 2012, 2013, and 2014. But but college football caught up with him, and it was slow, and it was antiquated, and it was so predictable. You knew he was running. If you saw two backs in the backfield, you knew he was running a wheel route right outside of that. It was easy to defend. And so that's one of the concerns I have. What I do love is that he will run the ball. He will make those wide receivers block, and he's going to recruit tall, bulky wide receivers. You're not going to have a Ja'Kai Douglas out there blocking on a wide receiver screen. You're going to have Ja'Kai Douglas catching the wide receiver screen.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the things I do love about that. You know he's going to get good backs. And if he brings with him, and I think we might get to this, prospective offensive line coach, that will make me feel so much better, because this guy is considered one of the gurus of offensive line coaches in the country. Now, let me say that with a caveat, because I know when Jimbo brought in Rick Trickett, who was supposed to be the guru back then, it didn't turn out so well.
Yeah.
That's why we're in this problem that we're in with this offensive line. But this guy is legit, legit. And so hopefully he'll bring it in. So I would say, Jesse, I moved to the middle for the Gus Malzahn experiment. I'm excited to buy a visor again, apparently. but no, I think from a standpoint of, can he coordinate an offense? Absolutely. My concern is, can he coordinate an offense in 2025?
Yeah, and I think that I share the same concern, right? I think that is the big worry with him, is that a lot of his success, and there's been a lot of it, let's be honest, a lot of it's in the rearview mirror.
That's right.
Like, the two best offenses that he had was at Tulsa, and that was 2007, 2008, and then with 2010 with Cam. And it's like, that's great, but that's a long time ago. And so you want to see how they do this year. But I will say, you know, again, like I said, with UCF, man, they had quarterback problems this year. KJ Jefferson just didn't work out. I actually thought that was going to be pretty decent for them. And then they, you know, they had the backup from Miami, Ja'Kari Brown. That didn't work out either. And so they ended up going with a freshman. And again, that's on Gus. But, you know, you look back at, they still had a top 10 rushing offense two out of the last 4 years that he was there. Yards per play, they were doing pretty good there at seventh in 2023 and 18th this year. So, I mean, the offenses at UCF weren't abysmal, right? But it's just, most of the success is behind him. So I do want to say that, like, that is my main concern. But you would hope that once you get a bunch of offensive minds in the room with what Gus is doing, you give him better athletes, you get Mike Norvell. Because again, like you said, man, I like that from a trust standpoint, you'll be able to hand Gus the keys and trust that he's going to run this offense, and you can go off and do other things. But I also think, because it's very similar to your offense, that you can help work in some concepts, right?
Yeah,
and so I like that part too, because I think Mike Norvell can actually help Gus develop his offense some.
Yeah.
The other thing that I will say that I like about it is, I think Gus has enough experience at the high level. I mean, again, like we were joking before the show, like, you have to remember that Mike Norvell is almost one of the least accomplished coaches on the staff now,
because
I mean, anytime you got a guy that can wear a national championship ring into the room,
that's right.
That I like is going to be able to, you won't have as much yes men in the room, which is something that we heard was a problem with this last staff. I think you also have a guy now who knows what a top notch recruiting department looks like. This is a guy that went out and got Cam Newton. This is a guy that had a bunch of top 10 classes. So he in the SEC. He knows what that's supposed to look like, and he can kind of take Mike Norvell under his wing, because, I mean, let's be honest, man, if he's stepping back to this role at almost 60 years old, I think the two things you have to consider here is, like, one, on the good side is, you know, UCF was still a Power Four program.
Yeah.
Would he actually be willing to step away from that to just go try and get another Power Four coaching job in the next few years? I think he's here as long as you want him here.
Yeah.
Because if Brendan Marion takes his job, who knows, man? A year or two later, he could be gone.
That's right.
So I do like that part of it too. And then I also like that he has ties to Florida. Obviously, he's been in Central Florida the last 4 years. So there's that recruiting ties too. Now, the one thing that I do worry about, and I'll kick it back to you for some final thoughts before we talk about this O-line coach, is I do worry about, like, if we, you know, we joked about calling Gus Malzahn like Mike Norvell's college football dad. How willing are you going to be to slap your own dad on the hand if he's not doing something right? You know what I mean? And that is the only thing that concerns me, is if you invite a voice into the room that's bigger than your own, how quickly are you going to be able to either fire him or tell him he's not doing something right when he's one of your mentors? But yes, I definitely agree that the old school success worries me, but I like the fact that he brings in a ton of experience, and UCF's offense, like I said, where they could run the ball, that's for daggone sure. Yeah. We just got to get him a quarterback and fix this offensive line. We'll talk about that line coach next.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I do think that's a valid concern. Like, can you, it is something different when you're in the room. You know, I remember, in my profession, having my mentor in the room who I really love and respect, and him not being my boss anymore and being under and having to say, hey, that's just not the way we're going to do it. Right. That's a hard thing, because you're like, this person really invested a lot of time and energy into me and gave me the opportunity to be in the position I'm in right now. And now I got to tell that person no. Like, that's hard. But there is going to come a time, Mike, if you want a powerful job at one of the most iconic brands in the country, and you're going to hire your mentor, you should be able to hire him with the expectation like, hey, I will put you in your place real fast if you're not doing this the right way, the way I wanted it to be done. And I think Gus Malzahn has to understand that as a former head coach, right?
Yeah.
To be able to come in. I mean, he got hired at Arkansas in 2006, I believe it was, and brought in the number one recruiting, the number one quarterback player in Mitch Mustang, who was supposed to be the greatest thing ever. And you think Houston Nutt, who was Gus Malzahn's mentor, you think it, and man, let me just say this for you guys who want to get familiar with Gus Malzahn, I would recommend, it's out there somewhere. There's a whole documentary on Gus Malzahn and Mitch Mustang and that whole ordeal at Arkansas. It's pretty incredible. I watched it because one of my friends, shout out Landa, who's an Arkansas fan, got me onto it. And it was, I mean, it's juicy, juicy. But there was a whole struggle between him and Houston about that whole thing. And so I'm sure Gus knows that coming in, like, hey, I'm not the big dog anymore. And the other thing that I think we're missing out on that we haven't talked about is the fact that, or maybe we have and I just missed it, but the fact that, transitioning into the Big 12 is a whole ordeal. Now, yes, you could look at SMU and say, well, they did it. They're 11-1 and they're in the conference championship. Sure, whatever. But you know, maybe UCF didn't have the, you know, one of the things that Jesse, you brought up was that SMU spent a lot of money.
A
lot of Power 5 transfer into that program. Whereas UCF didn't have that opportunity to do so. And so coming into the Big 12 this year after going 8-4 back-to-back years, it's hard. It's a hard transition. And I imagine looking around, Gus is like, listen, I love calling plays. I love being offensive coordinator. I don't mind recruiting. But this whole head coaching stuff where I got to raise money and do all that stuff, that's for the birds. So you are likely, I will say, I feel like what we'll probably get is a more re-energized Gus Malzahn, hopefully, which will then allow his brain, because he's not worrying about money and all that stuff, to open up. Because one thing I have said is that Gus Malzahn can scheme with the best of them. I told you about a play call that he called against the Colorado. Yep. I'm going to try to repeat it again, okay? It was a jet motion to the left, a counter with a guard and a tight end with a RPO QB keep, okay? That sound very complicated, way too much to even try to explain. And he drew that sucker up. And there was at least three players wide open, and KJ Jefferson made the wrong read. I was like blown away by just that complicatedness that Georgia Tech was doing against us, and we couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
And so you have that going on. So I do like that about him. I do like the fact that he might be re-energized because he doesn't have all that coaching stuff on. And the last point is you're absolutely right. You have to get rid of. And this is what I had to do, is you have to get rid of the head coaching stuff. He's not a head coach now. Mm-hmm. So, yes, he did not have a great end to his UCF stuff. But now that all that's off the plate, I wonder if now it gives him the ability to really dream again about the offense, and you're going to see some really cool stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's what your hope is. Like, maybe if Alabama called him and wanted to give him a head coaching job, which I don't think they would, then like maybe you see him go for that. But you're not stepping out of a Power Four role, you know. And that's, again, that's something that we talked about. Like, they went 9 wins back to back in their last few years in the AAC, but then they go over to the Big 12, and it's like, well, look at every program that came into the Big 12. Right. They were terrible last year, and this year I think only BYU is the only one that really came out of the dust once things, you know, they made that acclimation. So yeah, I'm not too much worried about that, but then hopefully he can bring some guys with him. You know, I don't know UCF has a roster that we're trying to raid, but I do know that they have a couple of targets that we're going at, like a 4-star receiver that we had talked about. It just shut his recruitment down that we were trying to flip. That could be one to watch there. I think there was maybe a 6'9" offensive tackle that they had that we would like to. But again, man, you're just looking for some productive players. Like we saw at, you know, Tatum Bethune came from UCF.
That's
like you just want some productive players. But who we really want, Michael, is Herb Hand, the offensive line coach currently at UCF. And well, the thing is, when you look at Coach Hand, like, he has some big names tied to him, right? He's been at UCF, which is not necessarily a big name where he's currently at, but he's also served as the O-line coach at Texas, at Penn State, at Auburn, and at Vanderbilt back when James Franklin was there as well. So you can definitely see some of the ties here on where, you know, he was with James Franklin at Vandy and Penn State, and then he was with Gus at Auburn and at UCF. They've had multiple units from what I was looking at, finished top 25 in pass block efficiency ratings. They've had multiple top 15 rushing offenses with this guy. When you click on his 247 recruiter profile, he comes in with 17 blue chip O linemen signed since the time that he's been at, I think it was Vanderbilt or back to Penn State. He's had 24 blue chips that he's helped with get signed to. So not only can the guy coach some O line, but he can also recruit very well. And so that right there is kind of one of the ones that you're hoping come in. I don't know what they're going to do with the other positions. You know, we were talking about this, and we can elaborate more after we give some thoughts on the line coach. But, you know, where does Tony Tokars end up? Does he go to back to an analyst role, which is where he was beforehand? Where does Kevin Johns fit in? Because we all thought when the quarterback flipped from Oklahoma, this was a certain done deal, right? They already hired an offensive coordinator, and they didn't promote him. So does he come as an analyst? Does he come as the QB coach, which is what Gus Malzahn typically coaches? So there's still a lot more moving pieces. But we think Gus is going to, obviously, if he's taking the keys to the offense, he's going to have a big say-so in who they bring as far as staff. And so we're hoping that Herb Hand is going to be one of those names. Now, you also don't know what direction UCF is going to go in. Are they going to promote one of their coordinators, and are they going to go that route? Are they going to hire somebody all new? Will he stay at UCF? But this is what we're hoping, is that Herb Hand will come be the offensive line coach, because, man, he's been associated with some big powerhouse programs, and he's had some productive units and a good history of recruiting.
Yeah, he's had productive units, and what's most important to me is development.
Yep.
Right? That's the biggest thing, because listen, you can go recruit the best offensive lines you want. If we had continued down this cycle with Alex Atkins, and let's say we had won a decent amount of games to keep this recruiting class, this would have been one of the best offensive line recruiting classes we've had in years, decades, probably. Yeah. And again, the problem with Alex Atkins that we've talked about and we've documented so much on the show is that it's not the fact that he couldn't necessarily recruit. It's more the fact that he wasn't developing those he recruit. There hasn't been one Alex Atkins recruit that's actually made a significant contribution to this team that he's recruited here. I mean, case in point, look at Julian Armella. I mean, he was out there fighting for sure this weekend. That's about as best, that's much as we've seen of him in the 3 years that he's been here. But outside of that, it's really been nothing. And so what I love about Herb Hand is that the guys that he's recruited, he's also really developed very well. And you know they're going to be tough. They're going to be hog mogs. They're going to be down in the dirt. They're not going to take nothing for nothing. And the one thing that if you've ever played football, you know that your offensive linemen and your defensive line, they've got to be the leaders and the toughest SOBs in that football locker room.
Yeah.
And if they're not, you can forget it. I don't care if you got the best quarterback. I don't care if you got the best wide receivers. I don't care if you got the best schemer of offensive play calls, defensive play calls in the world. If your offense and defensive line aren't the toughest and hardest working players and developing, It doesn't matter. And you saw that this year with Florida State going 2-10. Our offensive line was an absolute joke. They were a turnstile. Yeah. And so that's what I love about Herb Hand is that he's constantly and consistently developed the high-end talent that he's been able to recruit.
Yeah, I don't need gentle giants. Correct. I want neck beards and, you know, hog mobs, like you said, man. That's what I'm after on the offensive line.
I want now, more Dylan Gibbons, man.
Exactly. I want bent face mask and, yes, and, you know, bloody knuckles and all that. Now, if you want to read the tea leaves, I will say that FSU did just offer Derek Simons, yes, or Simmons, however you want to say that, grad transfer offensive line, 6'6", 325 from Western Carolina. Mm-hmm. This is a kid that I like. He has 15 starts at Western Carolina, almost 1,600 snaps of experience throughout his college career. He's had a 77 plus PFF grade the last two seasons. The reason I'm mentioning him is, first off, that would be a really nice get.
Yep.
But secondly, he also had an offer from UCF. So now that offer has been extended at Florida State, as much as I think, you know, Mike Norvell is probably still out here doing his thing, I don't think you make that offer unless your incoming offensive line coach gives you the green light to make that offer.
Correct.
So again, while Gus has been announced and Coach Hand has not, you know, if you read the tea leaves, I think that's probably something that you can look at there. So, yeah, man, I think on the offensive side, I think he got a good start, right? You got, yep, experience. You possibly got more experience coming with him at the offensive line coach. I think, again, this is very much a ship stabilizer, right? And I think this will get you back to the level you want to be.
Right.
Maybe you upgrade in the future, maybe not. Maybe Gus, you know, again, the guy's been a really great offensive coordinator. So maybe if he gets back to that, that's what he can just, like you said, man, just focus, narrow down, hone your focus in on just the offense, and it could be good there.
Yep.
But let's flip over to the defense and talk about the defensive hires now. But before we do that, Michael, let me bring you a word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. These guys got great FSU gear, and you guys can get it at a great price by using code SPEAR to save 10%. That's both online and in store. I apologize if you just missed their Black Friday sale and their Cyber Monday sale, because it was a great sale. But they got a ton of awesome gear for you guys. Not only just football, but basketball and baseball season, which is coming up as well, too. So make sure you guys check them out. 1415 Timberlade Road in Tallahassee, or shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page. So make sure you check them out and use code SPEAR to save 10%. So, Michael, offense is great, man. Like, I don't care how we score as long as we score, right? We're going to run the ball well with Gus. That's great to see. I like it. I want some pass plays. Hey, maybe we don't have to be so reliant on the quarterback, right?
Correct.
Maybe we get a good offensive line coach. We can run the ball. We don't have to have a generational quarterback to be great. But I think the one thing that's almost the most important here is the defensive coordinator, because at a place like Florida State, the first thing you think of is good defense. You want hard-nosed, physical, Mickey Andrews, bring it to you on Saturday type of defense.
So
while we have not got an official announcement at the time of recording this, all signs are currently pointing to Florida State hiring Nebraska DC Tony White. And so one of the things I will say when you look at Tony White is you're getting more experience here. Now, there's going to be some people that are going to be like, Nebraska, really? But Nebraska's got a pretty good defense. Now, there's little bit of back and forth with this hire, too. I will say that I like it. I'm a little more on the fence about this hire than you were, like you were with Gus, than me. And there's a reason for that, and we'll get into that. But I do like this hire. I think, you know, when you look at him versus who we thought, maybe Scott Simons from SMU or the co-DC at Oregon, I think this is a good one because he's familiar with the conference that he's coming to, because he was also the DC at Syracuse. So he knows about playing in the ACC. He's also done it in the Big Ten. So I also like that he's 45 years old. So he's relatively young. He's a relatable guy. He's been the Nebraska DC for the last 2 years. He did guide Nebraska's defense to its best statistical season since joining the Big Ten in 2011. He's been a Broyles Award nominee. And for those of you that aren't familiar, the Broyles Award is the top assistant coach in college football. Broyles Award nominee the last 2 years, 2023 and 2022. He was Rivals Non-Power 5 Recruiter of the Year in 2014. He was the Mountain West Recruiter of the Year in 2011 and 2013. So I like that. His defenses have been good at Nebraska, Michael. So scoring defense the last 2 years, 19th at 19.8 points per game allowed in 2024, and then 13th at 18.3 points per game allowed. So you've been under 20 points your 2 years at Nebraska. Now, I like that, especially considering he did take over the 77th ranked defense when he got hired, which was giving up 27.6 points per game. So you saw a big improvement there. Again, I don't really care to use total defense, but in yards per play metrics, which is a little better method to use, he was 54th this year, but 7th in 2023. So I like that. That sounds good as well. But Michael, the music to my ears is this rushing defense.
Bring it on.
So this year, they've had a top 15 run defense, 106 yards per game allowed. Ninth last year at only 92.9, under 100 yards a game on average. Sing that to me all day long because, boy, we love to give up some 200-yard ground games. And that's also considering that he took over the 108th best rushing defense, which is giving up 189 yards per game. So when you look at some of the FEI numbers, which are the opponent adjusted and pace of play, because that's a better way to look at things, top 20 defense the last 2 years, 18th and 19th. Syracuse was 45th, 68th, and 68th. And then he was at Arizona before that, and it was 31st. So, you know, again, this is a 3-3-5 guy, and we're going to talk about all that stuff in just a second. I'll let you share some more details on that. But, you know, I will say the one thing that I've heard a lot about with him is like, oh, do we have the scheme to run 3-3-5? And I'm like, we didn't have the scheme to run a 4-4-2 or 4-2-5. Exactly. We are the personnel. We didn't have the personnel to run a 4-3. So I think I like it because our DBs are our deepest, most strongest position. And so then you really, if, you know, Josh Farmer and Daryl Jackson both walked on senior night on Saturday, so they're probably not coming back. So you got Daniel Lyons, you got KJ Sampson, whoever you go get from the portal, you know, right. Because don't tell me Grady Kelly, because he can get a bus ticket back to Colorado. So I think you're a few linebackers away, but like we talked about, you got Blake, and goodness gracious, we got to give Omar Graham Jr. like, man, tip of the hat. Where did he come from?
Get your flowers, boy.
Exactly. And then Juice Cryer, if he comes back. So I think you can transition to a 3-3-5. I also like that, you know, of course he's a multiple guys and that's not all we're going to run, but with the 3-3-5, I think it works good in the ACC. I mean, this is a very pass heavy conference that we're in. And as you mentioned, NC State's been giving the ACC heck for a long time with that 3-3-5 defense. So I love everything I just talked about, right? I love the top 20 defenses. I love the top 10, top 15 rush defenses. That's great. Even when you go back to Syracuse, I was like, okay, well, how does he do against the pass? Because we're a pass-heavy ACC. He had the 14th and the 26th ranked pass defenses there. So things were looking good back there. You know, all this stuff was looking great. Here is the one thing that I worry about with this guy. And so obviously, because everyone told us how wrong we were about the season, we got to get all our thoughts out there.
Yep.
So my thought process is when you look at the 2023 offenses that he faced at Nebraska, this is what gives me a little bit of hold up because this was his kind of banner year. This is when they had the best defense that Nebraska's had in the last decade. Well, in 2023, they faced Iowa, 132nd ranked offense, Michigan State, 131st, 110th, 106th, 97th, or 92nd, 87th, Northern Illinois, and Louisiana Tech. So literally half your schedule was against terrible offenses.
Yeah.
Now, with that being said, they held all of them except for Wisconsin, who scored 24 points. They held every one of those terrible offenses to under 20 points per game. So they did what they were supposed to do against terrible offenses, but they also didn't really face any tough offenses. They only faced one that whole season that was even ranked in the top 50, and that was Michigan at 14th, and they gave up 45 points. That is what concerns me the most, is you shut down a lot of bad offenses, and you didn't do great against some of the good ones. Now, when you look forward to 2024, they did have a little bit of a tougher slate. They did face some tougher offenses this year. You had number two offense in the country, Indiana. Youch, right? That was a 56-point game. You got torched in that one. And I'm not expecting them to shut down every defense, right? Even Mickey had some bad games here and there.
That's right.
The other ones I do look at is number 16, Ohio State, was the top 20 offense there, averaging 35.5 points per game. They held them to 21. They held them to 285 yards. That's the second lowest of the season behind the Michigan game that just happened this week. You were one of only three teams to hold Ohio State under 30 points, with Penn State and Michigan, two great defensive teams. And then Colorado, you held Colorado to their lowest point total of the season at 10 points. Only team to hold Colorado under 20 points, and the only team to hold them under 300 yards. So I like this hire, Michael. I think he's a hard-nosed, get-after-you coach. But what my point is, against about 50% of the time against the better offenses, it has been either really good or really, really bad. And so
yeah,
I like the hire, and the defensive line coach is going to be a big, you know, gold star next to this hire, which we'll talk about next. But I do have a little bit of reservations with this one just because of what we just talked about.
Yeah. So I think with Tony White, if he does end up, because again, guys, this hasn't been confirmed by Florida State. It's been reported by Pete Thamel that he's signed a 3-year deal with Florida State, and other outlets are reporting the same as well. So we're not making it official here. We're just saying if it does happen, if Tony White is a hire, this was the way you were with Gus is the way I am with this dude.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is, I'm not going to say a home run hire, but as close to a home run as you can get. He's not an up and comer. He's experienced. He has coordinated on every defense he's been. It's been top 20 defenses, even at schools like Syracuse and Arizona State. And what I love most about this hire, and I said this to you in our pre-show and our lead up to this, is that he has proven that he can coordinate a defense without star power, that his defenses can be tough and hard to score against, and they're not all five-star. Now, coming to Florida State, he's going to be expected to get 4 and 5 stars and the best 3 stars he can find, for sure, absolutely. But what it gives me hope is that coming into this year, where the talent is good, but not as good as we want it to be, that he can put together a defense that's going to be solid, that's going to show up and going to give the offense a chance every game. And that's not to say that this defense this year didn't give the offense a chance. The offense was historically bad, and that defense did what it could. But let's be real, it quit halfway through the season. It literally did. Now, it showed up for some games, for the Miami game, for the Florida game, at least for the first half, but then it quit. But I think this guy, Tony, can bring in an attitude, and everything I've watched of him, when I watch him in when I watch his press conferences, when I watch him speak, when I watch him break down the 3-3-5 defense, man, I'm not putting this on him. So please don't jump down my throat if he turns out to be terrible. But man, I get Mickey Andrew vibes. I'm just saying. Yeah. And we haven't had a coordinator like that since what's the dude that was hanging out at the bars?
Pruitt.
Yeah. That we haven't had a great defense coordinator like Mick that gave me Mickey vibes since Pruitt. And I really feel like he is going to bring a well-coordinated defense. He's a good recruiter. And let me just tell you, when I say good recruiter, to be able to get 4 and almost 5 stars to go to Nebraska, which is probably a recruiting deathbed for coaches, it's hard. That's why Nebraska hasn't been able to get back to what it was in the 90s, because it's really hard to recruit to Nebraska. Yeah. And he was able to bring in high 4 stars and almost 5 stars to that defense there. That just really excites me. Now, what will make this hire even more like, not that I'm going to jump off and say we're winning the national title, or we're having a Mickey Andrews era defense again, but what would help it if, and I know we're going to get to this, if he brings one of these coaches that we're thinking he might be bringing, because that coach can really recruit and is a really good developer of players there too. But that's why I'm really excited about Tony White. Of course, he runs a 3-3-5. The other thing I'll throw this back to you, Jesse, on is that everybody's like, oh, the 3-3-5, I don't know. Well, listen, like you said, I mean, you joked before the show, we should have run a 1-1-9 with the players we got coming out this season, right? And the fact of the matter is that one of the things I love about Tony White is that he's shown in his previous coaching stops that he will adjust that defense to his players. So, yes, he might love the 3-3-5, but I would actually call him a multiple defensive coach. He can be multiple. He'll run a 3-3-5 if that's what fits best. He'll run a 4-2-6. He'll even run a nickel. He'll run your 4-3, your 4-3. I've seen him even put in run a 3-4 on different instances if that's what's best for that. So that's what I love about him. I'm excited about this hire. This is the one hire that I'm like, okay, Mike, okay, I see what you're doing here.
Yeah, and I mean, those 3-3-5s can be deceiving anyway, because you might walk up someone like Marvin Jones Jr., who was considered a linebacker at Georgia. I think you make a good comment there about the recruiting at Nebraska, too, and I was looking it up earlier. to kind of see, like, you know, it's Christmas time. We're shopping off their off their recruit list. But Nebraska has actually had zero top 15 classes in the past 10 years. And so it's a tough place to recruit. And so what you're hoping is that you can bring these guys who are proven, who have the experience coaching, and you can put them in the state of Florida where they're surrounded by a talent rich, you know, state with a logo on their you know, polo that's going to get them cachet as they walk into a home. And so I like that too. And that, I think that's where you're going to be at with Gus too. Like, you know, you put the right logo back on his visor. And man, I've never been a visor guy, but I guess we got a visor coach. Here we go. Talk about 2008 or whatever. But I, you know, I think you put the right logo on there and you'll see the recruiting take off there. So I like this hire, man. I really do. It's just like I said, the main things that concern me are that the Big Ten offenses aren't that great.
That's right.
And the ACC offenses where they're a little bit better. Again, I only care about points. I don't care about yards. I don't care about total offense. I only care about scoring because that's how you win games. At Syracuse, it was 40th, 64th, and 90th. And so that is what worries me. But like we talked about, you made a great point. At both of his stops, even at Arizona State, those were not the most talent-loaded rosters either.
Right.
So, yeah, man, I think this can be a good hire. Again, you got, what, 5 years or 6 years coming in of Power Four coordinating experience. I like that, too. Remember, what's his name? Adam Fuller. He didn't have any Power Four experience.
That's right.
And so I love the hire, dude. I really do, man. I feel as good about this hire. I have my skepticism, right? And I just want to put that on paper because Lord knows everybody loved to tell
us. We ain't trying to get crushed next season if this don't work out.
We ain't doing that again. I have learned my lesson from being all sunshine. But yeah, no, I agree, man. I think this is probably as good as Scott Simons. I think this is probably as good as all the other names that we've heard. I just have my little bit of skepticism because the Big Ten's not a great offensive conference. That's it. But man, if you can hold me under 20 points a game and you got a coach that historically hits around 30, that's all I need.
Yep.
But let's talk about this defensive line. Michael, you know, I know it's just Thanksgiving, man, and turkey's the food to eat. But I'll tell you, man, one of my favorite dishes is pot roast.
Come on.
And we might be getting Coach Pot Roast himself as the D-line coach. Now, this is all but rumored. This is pretty much kind of like we're hearing with Coach Hand coming with Gus, but it has not been made official yet. We don't know, because here's the problem with Terrence Knighton is the guy we're referring to, Nebraska's current D-line coach. The only problem with this one is he's a Matt Rhule. That's the name I'm trying to think of. He's a Matt Rhule guy. He coached with him at Carolina, followed him to Nebraska. The connection is more to him than it is to DC, than to Tony White. So I don't know what they're going to offer him. I don't think he has – it's kind of like a Patrick Surtain situation. I don't think he has nearly enough experience to be given the defensive coordinator situation, you know, the promotion there.
Right.
So hopefully he does bring him. It has been rumored. But this is a hire that I like. First off, 38 years old. You are dropping 20 years off the coaching age at the defensive tackle position. And, Michael, I guess we should probably start here, right? Look, everyone's probably going – well, then what does that mean about Odell? So let's go ahead and let's address it, because I know everybody's thinking that right now. Yep. Look, guys, it is what it is. I assume he's going to be given his choice of whether he wants to just retire altogether or whether he wants to go to an off-the-field role. I would assume it would be an off-the-field role. That's kind of what we've heard throughout this whole process. Look, analysts can coach now. So to me, I think when you have a kind of a young and up and comer in this D-line coach, because Nebraska is really his first like Power Four college job. Now we'll get into his experience here in just a second, but you have a young up and comer, man, what better guy to pair him with than an analyst than Odell, a guy who's been there and done it, and he can help kind of pass the baton to him over the next few seasons. And then if Odell wants to retire, that's great. I think that would be an amazing combination with having these two in the same room, having these two same minds. But the recruiting just hasn't been there, the defensive tackle position. And so it's time to go another direction. And so we love Odell. He is FSU. This isn't a damnation on anything that he's done, but the recruiting just has not been there. The development can even be questioned. So I think he's going to move to an off-the-field role. So it's looking like that move is going to entail bringing in Terrence Knighton. Again, like we said, 38-year-old defensive line coach, played in the NFL from 2009 to 2016. So you're still somewhat relevant in the minds of young players. He started his career in Jacksonville, so he's lived in Florida before. Now, coaching wise, he did coach D-line at Wagner from 2019 to 2020. Then he moved on to be a D-line assistant with the Carolina Panthers in 2021 and 2022. I like it because that's NFL experience. That's even right. If it wasn't his assistant coach, still, you got some NFL experience there on this defensive line. You also get Nebraska's D-line coach the last 2 years, which we just talked about. They had top 15 rush defenses, which are really good as well. They were third in the Big 12 in sacks in 2020, or excuse me, Big 10 in 2023, the most in 10 years for Nebraska. So they were getting better. He did have a couple of all Big 10 defensive tackles. I like to see that too. Now, the question will be, though, Michael, you're bringing these guys in because can he recruit? Now, I will say that I've seen Nebraska fans were like, "Ah, oh, man, I hate to see Tony go," but they were ready to have a mental breakdown whenever we announced that we might be taking pot roast from them too, because they seem pissed about this one. I've seen, you know, tweets that this is their best position coach on the entire staff. And I will say, as far as recruiting, looking up his profile on 247, he has gotten 5 blue chip commitments since 2003, 3 at defensive tackle. Look, man, again, like you said, it's a hard place to recruit at Nebraska. And if you might be thinking, well, that's not a ton. Well, Odell has only signed 3 since 2018 if Kevin Wynn stays committed. So,
correct.
I think you got your answer there. So you put him in the state of Florida with that logo on his shirt, man, and I think this is going to be a home run hire at defensive line.
Yeah, let me start there with the Odell thing, because I know that's where a lot of Florida State fans have angst in. And listen, we at Plant Spear, we love Odell. I mean, as he likes to say, he no-blooded, right? He's unconquered. Yeah. I mean, the man was a part of the 80s Seminole run there. He was part of all 3 national championships, whether playing or coaching. And he's an icon. He's a legend. He's a figure. He's a statue somewhere at Florida State at some point in time. So he gets to go out on his own. For sure, I agree with that. Where he doesn't get to go out on his own is having a direct connect effect to the recruiting and development of the defensive line. Because we are at a stage and place where now the product is not matching what we are paying for it.
Right.
And listen, they had to have, and I didn't like the way they did this with Bobby. I didn't like it the way they did it.
No, I didn't either, yeah.
But I agree that it was time. It was time to say to Bobby, man, we want to make sure you get to go out on top and you go out the right way. That's what they should have done. But they should have had that closed door. They should have figured it out. I think we have the opportunity to do that with Odell, to say, hey, we want you to be on this team. I want you to be on this staff. You're not going to be the lead D-line coach anymore. You might be the assistant. You might be an off the field role. You might be an analyst. You might be a ambassador. We're going to come up with whatever we need to do for you. Right. That's how we should do that. But the results are not matching. Again, I mean, you just gave it since 2018. We've only signed 3 blue chip people. And that's if this current blue chip guy stays on the fold. Like, it has not been good enough. You can't count what happened with Fabian Lovett and those guys, because they were transfer portal guys that came in, right?
And most of them were already productive when they got here.
Exactly. And so I love Odell. I want him to die in his coaching polo. Like, that would be awesome. But not anytime soon, but not coaching these current these up and comers. I'm not saying he's lost the touch. He just has not produced. And listen, we don't pay Mike Norvell to hold on to Seminole legacies because we love them. We pay Mike Norvell to go get W's. And right now, part of us not getting W's has been that defensive line. Yep. So that's where I'll say. So if we're able to get Terrence, listen, that boy, I mean, what we've seen from the players that he's coached. I mean, Nebraska fans, like you said, they're freaking out. If you go to their message boards, they're about to like have a meltdown. It's like somebody died that was really important there.
Yeah.
This is how impactful that he is. And like you said, again, and I'll throw this back to you, getting him in the Florida atmosphere where he's from, where he played NFL football, where he's probably recognized, especially in the Duval area, right? Getting him in there where he's in a talent-rich state, where he can go after those high 4-star, almost 5-star, really high talented, diamond in the rough 3-star defensive linemen, where he can recruit them, where he can go into a home and say, look, I've been where you've been. Mm-hmm. because right now he's going into cornfields and not getting much and still turning out high defensive linemen. So if he could do that here in Florida, absolutely we want him here. He's young, so he can still connect to this next generation. And like you said, I love the idea of having Odell be like a mentor to him in the state of Florida and helping him get those connections. I think that's a great opportunity, but it's time. We love Odell, but it's time.
It's simply recruiting. And don't get me wrong, it's all changed since they can be analysts now, and analysts can coach. You know, that would be a great, whether it's ambassador of traditions or, you know, defensive line unconquered analyst.
Yeah, whatever.
Exactly. Whatever we need him to do, I hope he gets to do it. But the recruiting has got to change, because that's where the elites separate themselves, is trench recruiting. And so hopefully these hires pan out, man. The thing is with coaching hires, Michael, is you just really never know.
That's right.
This could all come crashing down and we could be looking for a new, entirely new coaching staff in 2 years. We just don't know. But I think as we, you know, we wrap up the coaching staff part of this episode, again, man, I just think you have to feel good. And there's still a lot of people left to shake out. I think you're probably going to try and keep Surtain there. Although I will say that Tony White did mostly coach the secondary, but he's also coached linebacker. So you're keeping Surtain, you're keeping Randy. I think we all know the answer to that one. So there's still some unknowns left in this. There's still some unknowns how these guys are going to do with their new stop at here in Tallahassee. But overall, man, I just think when you look at where you took this last staff from guys who were kind of washouts at other Power 5 jobs to G5 up-and-comers, man, you've went the complete opposite direction this time around. You went and got experience. You went and got Power 4 experience. Yep. You went and got former head coach. Like, so I like it, man. I think you did well. I think you need to continue to surround them with good position coaches who can also be good recruiters for you, and then we'll see. And so the last thing we want to talk about here is obviously signing day is coming up. Now, hopefully some of these coaching hires, by you getting them done sooner than later, you have the opportunity to flip some guys. That's always the hope. Or they're going to bring some guys from their respective programs, because that's something that you talked about before, Michael, was like, look, it's not always about who are you. It's about who you bringing. And
that's
so there's some guys I've already seen. You know, you look at Nebraska. I've already seen they have a D lineman, Jamari Butler, that has planned to enter the transfer portal. 6'5", 260, sounds like an edge there. 65 tackles, 7.5 sacks, and a forced fumble in 3 years with the Cornhuskers. You know, then you also have one that I really got my eye on here is Nebraska linebacker Stephon Thompson. He has entered the transfer portal. And the thing with about him that makes me think you have a good chance at this one is, he is a former Syracuse transfer who has 194 career tackles, 9 sacks, and 3 forced fumbles. But if he came from Syracuse, that means he followed Tony to Nebraska. So maybe he'll follow him again to Tallahassee, because we could use a productive linebacker like that.
We could.
That is exactly what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And you just need guys who are productive at the G5 or P4 level. So you're hoping that they can bring some guys with them. We'll have to, you know, monitor who we get as these position coaches and who else they can bring. But as we go into signing day, it's on the 4th and through the 6th. So, guys, I mean, obviously we know this is going to be a lackluster signing day. Florida State does currently sit at 53rd in the 247 composite rankings. We have 12 total commits. Obviously, the one that we all got our eyes on that we're worried about is Solomon Thomas, potentially flipping to another program. So far, it sounds like he's still committed to Florida State. It sounds like, you know, he's still in the boat. He trusts Mike Norvell to make this hire. He wants to see. He even said it didn't really matter. There was no comment on Gus Malzahn. I think he's more worried about his offensive line coach. But, Michael, you know, look, hey, we talked about ambassador of traditions for Odell.
That's right.
There is no greater tradition at Florida State than Mike Norvell losing his top recruit on signing day. So I would just bear with the fact that Solomon Thomas is probably not going to be in your class. But, man, if you could keep him, that would be a huge get for you. Then, obviously, you have Kevin Wynn, defensive lineman there. Obviously, this is going to be a little bit up in the air as well, because we weren't sure what they were going to do with Odell yet. But this sounds like they're going to want to bring in a new defensive line coach. Hopefully he can be able to keep Kevin Wynn in the fold there as well. But that's another one that I do worry a little bit about there. Zay Thomas, 4-star DB coming out of Fort Lauderdale. I think you feel pretty good about this one. As long as they retain Surtain, I think you're pretty much locked up there. Yep. Mario Nash Jr., 4-star offensive line, was just in Tallahassee this past weekend for the game. I think you still feel pretty good there. Now, again, it would be really nice to have a position coach in place so they know who they're going to be playing for.
Right.
But, you know, they can always delay their signing if they want to. But that one I do feel pretty decent about there. Chase Lofton, tight end, 3-star coming out of Omaha, Nebraska. you know, maybe they can be like, look, guys, I've been to Florida. It's right. better than the cornfields. You want to come on down there with us? And then, of course, you have the two DeSeer brothers who were actually committed to UCF at one point.
Now
they flipped, even though, you know, Gus is over here. He's not the defensive coach, but maybe he had a hand in that. Daryl and Mandrill, both three stars, both got that twin energy, man. They're fun to watch. They're cool to follow on social media. They look very committed, excited to get both of these guys too. Love the size too as well, both 6'4", 6'4 and a half, 240. Ethan Pritchard, three-star linebacker coming out of Sanford, Florida. Been committed for a long time. I think you feel good about this one. I don't think, you know, we'll see what happens if they get rid of Randy, but I think you feel okay there. Obviously, Kevin Sperry, the quarterback, three-star out of Guyer in Denton, Texas, four-star depending on where you look. Look, guys, he just committed. He's not going anywhere right. if he just right. committed. Max Redmond, Cardinal Newman out of West Palm, safety there, three-star. I think you're pretty – again, if you keep Surtain, I think you're pretty good there. The other one that I wanted to talk about, Michael, that we didn't get a chance to talk about yet was Jordan Scott that they just picked up. Wide receiver commit, 6'7", 215, the number two rated receiver in On3 and 247 from the JUCO ranks. I'm excited about this kid. This looks like Johnny Wilson 2.0. I've seen some of his, you know, some of his highlights. He's probably got better hands than Johnny Wilson. Again, I know it was terrible competition he's going against at community college, but got good hands, a lot of one-handed catches, a lot of one contested catches. I saw one clip where he put a dude on his back, you know, blocking.
I saw that one,
You had said Gus's offense is big on perimeter blocking. Right. Well, here you go. 6'7", 215, that's one to work with. Obviously, just committed, so you think he's pretty solid there. And then the kicker that I can't really pronounce his name right, Bruno Reus, or I'm sorry, dude, if I said that wrong, out of Venice, Florida. Top five kicker in the, you know, in the Coles ratings there. So going to be a small one on signing day. Hopefully there's a few that you can flip. I know they're trying to flip a couple of guys. Tavion Wallace was a linebacker. They're trying to flip from Arkansas that you thought you were going to get anyway.
Right.
So there's a few names. There could be a few surprises with these new hires. There could be a few surprises the other way too. But really, outside of Solomon Thomas and Kevin Wynn, I think the rest are pretty solid. So hopefully some good surprises. Hopefully not any bad surprises. But signing day, not going to be the most, you know, exciting this year, but you still got some really good pieces if you can keep them in the fold.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, you know my philosophy about signing day and about high school recruiting right now or anything like that. It's basically as it has been the last several years, which is I'll see you when you sign the paper. When FSU sends out that tweet that you've signed, I'll get excited about you. Until then, you know, Travis Hunter and all those guys and KJ Bolden, they've broken my heart too many times to be so invested in the signing day. As I said before on this show, listen, if you're an FSU fan, you should go ahead and just set your hopes to zero and be excited for anything above that that comes in on signing day. I just think that when you look at this team, as they're getting the position coaches in, as they're beginning all these coordinators in, some of these players are going to love it and they're going to say yes to it. Some of these players are going to not love it and not say yes to it and go somewhere else. Some of these players are going to go in a wait and see approach and see how it all pans out. And then you might have players that weren't even on our radar that jump in on signing day or afterwards, because it's not the only signing day. Right? There's another one coming. And so you have that also as well too. And then again, as we've already said, this high, yes, we believe, we're saying right here on the Plant the Spear, mark it down. High school recruiting has to get better. It has to take precedent. But this year, 2025, going into 2025, it's going to be a heavy portal class. So if you're watching anything, wherever you are getting your news from, you need to be all in on the portal. Who are we getting out of the portal? Specifically, what offense and defensive linemen are we getting out of the portal? If we're going after a quarterback, are we trying to hit up some more linebackers? Like, that's where we need to be. The high school class, whatever they can get this year, that class is ruined already. So whatever they can get, they're going to get. It's really about building the high school class for the 2026 cycle, 27 and 28 going forward. This year is going to be about the portal. What are we getting from the portal that's going to help us remedy what we just walked through?
Yeah, and I do think some of these new coaches that you got are going to be good recruiters. I think you know, in the right tense, with if Florida State gets back to winning, I think in the state of Florida, I think you got some guys that have proven they can recruit here. But like you said, man, you're just going to kind of have to take it on the chin for this one. But man, I tell you what, that portal, got me wringing my hands juicy. Already. It's not even juicy. Open yet. And there's some massive names that are yes. jumping in here.
Yes.
And so I like that you have new energy because you feel like, you know, coming off of this 2-10 season, maybe it might be hard to get some pulls, but man, I think when you bring in some fresh blood and some fresh insight, I think you can have a real opportunity to go get some people out of the portal. And there's already Absolutely. Been some big names jumping Absolutely. In there. And I do think because they're making these big hires, they're probably going to overpay for some of these coaches to get them in here. They're probably going to go all in on the portal too, because this might be one of the last years that you can just really kind of throw your
That's
financial
right.
weight around with the house settlement coming.
That's right. That's
so
right.
So I don't think they'd be doing all this to not. So, man, it's going to be excited. So make sure you guys stay tuned. You know, make sure, you know, we're going to try and get all the news out to you as much as we can. We'll keep you updated on signing day. Michael, there's one more thing. There's one more thing I was going to talk about before we got out of here.
What are we going to talk about?
You know, Michael, I don't know why, but this number 21 just keeps popping into my head for some reason.
21.
Oh, maybe it's 21 years without ACC championship. That's what it is. Man, Michael, you know, I hate when I choke on some orange juice and get stung by a bee. It's a little tough there.
That's
you,
right.
You knew we weren't going to get out of here without making fun of Miami. Man, I had to laugh at that. I was at the game and I saw the score and I had to laugh. First off, it was a great weekend for some football. You know, Georgia Tech takes Georgia to 8 overtimes. Oof. That game was ridiculous. But yeah, man, I know they're going to laugh and they're going to be like, oh gosh, oh, you're 2-10. Yeah, I know. Guess what? You still suck too. Because
Thank you.
You're going to get the same amount of trophies as ours does this year. Now, we'll see if they make the playoffs. Probably not. They might get left out there. But I just had to laugh, man. They went all in on that team. They went all in on that quarterback. Still could not make the ACC. Couldn't even make it to the ACC championship so they could get their face kicked in like they did last time when they got lost, when they lost by 5 touchdowns.
My goodness.
You know, I mean, look, I will give them credit. They recruited better, but man, without Cam Ward, and let's be honest, as much as I hate to admit it, Cam Ward is a generational quarterback. Yeah. Those don't come along very often. And then you land them too. And without him and the ACC refs, that's a 6-6 team, man. Yeah. And so, like, he's not coming back next year. So yeah. The fact that this happened was hilarious. Of course, Michigan upsets Ohio State as well. And then, man, it was flag planting season fighting, pepper spraying type of season from what I heard, man. It was crazy.
Pepper spraying was wild. Yeah.
Even NC State, UNC tried to plant the flag and we're fighting. Man, it was flag planting season on Saturday. Unfortunately, we were on the wrong side of it. But, man, what an exciting Saturday of football. And, of course, give me some thoughts on Miami trying to chug some orange juice there and end up choking on it.
Listen, it is not a college football season without Miami choking on some oranges, getting stung by bees, and again, not winning a conference championship. You know, the All Canes Conference is going on 21 years now, right? 21 years. And you paid, I don't know, upwards of almost $20 million for this roster only to be begging the college football committee to get in. And listen, I am not one of those guys that says ACC, ACC. Mm-mm. I could care less.
I pray for Miami's downfall every day.
Every day. I hope Miami gets left out of the playoffs so they can feel what we feel when they called us whiny babies last season, right?
Exactly.
I hope they get left out. I don't care about the ACC. It's absolutely ridiculous. And let's be real. If they didn't have Cam Ward, what is this season's record? How many wins they have? Because they should have lost 5 games.
Yeah.
Easily. Oh, also, if they also didn't have the ACC refs on their back pockets, let's be real about that too.
Yeah.
And so the fact of the matter is that you're 10-2. Okay. I don't care that. I mean, we're 2-10. I hated that. I hated we lost to you, but you still couldn't go to the ACC championship. You still couldn't go. You still couldn't win it.
And didn't play a single ranked team all year. So
didn't play a ranked team all year. So go wine. As far as the rest of the weekend, that it was wild. I was driving back from Kentucky watching Ohio State, Michigan. So I saw that. I saw the flag plant. I saw the fighting. I saw the cops pulled out the mace. So like, what is going on here? NC State, North Carolina, Florida, Florida State. I mean, it's just that. I will say this, and I said this to you pre-show. I both love the fact that on rivalry weekend, if you win in somebody else's home field, go plant the flag. Go do it because they should have beat you on the field.
Exactly.
I also love the fact that our players got angry and tried to stop it. Mike Norvell even, you know, had some Mike pulled out the 3-point finger to Billy Napier.
So Billy, better get your
he said, better take your George wearing team off this field right now. Like, oh man, it was good.
I wish they'd have shown more fight during the game, but you know, it happens. Which, by the way, for the Florida fans that may be catching this, and I doubt there's many of them now that they've moved on to celebrating their Tax Slayer Bowl berth coming up. They're not anything special either, Michael. And I know we lost by 20, and I know we're 2-10, but like, if we didn't give the ball away literally every time we got to the red zone, like it was the law in Tallahassee, man, that game, they're not anything special. So, man, I really do think, like, when you close this episode out, man, like, Miami will probably come back to earth next year unless they find another generational quarterback in the portal. Florida's got a lot of momentum. But that team's, you know, they're going to lose some pieces too, and I don't think they're that great. Mm-hmm. When you look at their wins, I know we are I don't want to say anything not family friendly on the show, but we're bad. Let's just put it that way. But with some good hires and a good portal class, man, we'll be right back in there. I do really feel like it. And again, I feel like bringing in the experience and, you know, all the Power Four experience and everything that you did, man, I thought they've started very well with these two hires. And then, you know, I can't say that either one would have been my first choice or my best choice, but I'm not mad at either one of them. So I like them both. Now let's just go fill out the rest of the staff and let's get started in the portal, because that's what's going to fix this thing for next year. So any final thoughts before we get out of here, man?
No, I absolutely agree with you. You know, neither of these hires would have been my first choice or the best choice that I thought. But, you know, like I said, I think with the DC hire, I think that's a good hire. I think Gus Malzahn, I'm gonna take a wait and see. I see a lot of good in that. I also have a lot of concerns. I also have concerns that you've brought up in the DC hire as well too. And so I think, you know, it's going to be really predicated on Mike to get this right. I mean, this is his last shot. If this is not right by next year, we're hiring a whole new coaching staff, like you said.
Yeah,
64, whatever it be, $45 million be darned. We're going to get a new coaching staff either way. So, or if it doesn't work out. So, you know, he's putting everything on the line for this. He even said, if you remember in his post-game comments, this is going to get fixed. And he said the word immediately.
Yeah.
So, Mike, what that means is that's an 8-4 season next year. And I'm not slipping any past that. You're going to hear me for the rest of time. For the rest of moving forward, 8-4. It got to be 8-4. No worse than 8-4. Because you can't say it's going to get fixed immediately and then produce something less than that. So that's where we're at, and that's what we're going to trust.
Yeah, and I think that's the moves that he's making. He wants to win now because he knows he has to. And so we'll keep you guys in touch as the week progresses. Any new hires that come out, signing day, of course, any surprises both ways, we'll keep you guys posted on that. Look, hey, we appreciate you guys rolling with us through this 2024 season and sticking with us. It's been a tough one to cover, Michael. This has been a learning experience for us all. This is not the season that we asked for. This is not the season that we wanted. You know, as people who cover this, we now have got to do a one-loss season and almost a one-win season. So it has been a learning experience for everybody, but we appreciate you guys sticking with us through the 2024 season. It's going to be an exciting off season, so make sure you stay tuned to Plant the Spear. Rate and review on the podcast if you guys are listening in audio form. Like and subscribe. Drop a comment below what you think of these hires if you're watching on YouTube. Make sure you check out today's sponsor, Alumni Hall FSU. Shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and make sure you save 10% using code SPEAR. So appreciate you guys sticking with us, and we'll catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.
Go Noles.